The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
I've been waiting a whole week to ask you about being in the choir Easter
buddy.
Sunday
yes.
because, you know, I get to listen to your dulcet tones talk at me.
Right.
Rarely, if ever, do I get to hear you belt something out.
Well.
How'd it go?
Michael, it was glorious.
Really?
Yeah. There we were singing Mercy Tree.
Mercy Tree?
A lovely piece of music I had never heard before.
I think Shel Anderson or somebody wrote that, The Giving Tree?
This is Mercy Tree. And there I was, two singers down from the great Randy Mayfield.
He's a big deal.
He's a big deal.
Yeah.
He's a big deal. And he's quite a good singer. And
he was roughing it with you that day.
He was. Yeah, he was. And I only sang at the last service because we have those, you and I, have those obligations on Sunday morning.
Which would be 8:30
on Fox 2.
Yeah. Hancock and Kelly, the television show.
Right. So I went from the show straight to church, hung out in the green room of the choir
lounge.
Mm-hmm.
What, they got coffee and cigarettes back there for people? Everybody getting ready to get out there and belt
some
songs.
Egg casserole. Now it's cold.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. Absolutely. We had a great service at Chesterfield Presbyterian Church.
Well, good for you,
Reverend
brother.
Hugh Barlett bringing the message on Easter Sunday, and he did a splendid job. And, it's a fairly new church for Georgianne and me.
We have
been going there for a little over a year now, and it's just been a great experience.
Yeah, and you also go to a church here in the city that I know that you're
Great big, Day Missionary Baptist Church, the Reverend Arthur Melton presiding.
And I've met the Reverend a couple of times.
Great guy.
So,
one of my best friends.
We both were at the ball game yesterday. We're going to talk about
that
at 9 o'clock. But it was a long day, one could say, yesterday. So you said you were excited to get home to your bed?
Yeah.
And there you were sleeping.
You know, they don't make these beds like they used to.
No.
I mean, it used to be you get in a bed and it stayed where it was.
Yeah.
And, you don't. So somewhere around 1:45, 2 a.m. this morning, I did the big flip.
I was getting in about then.
Yeah. And I was well into my REM pattern at that point and beyond, whatever the next stage.
Hadn't even gone to the first bathroom break?
No. Uh-uh. And so I did the big flip.
Yeah.
Now, we have in the bedroom there. We've got one of those, what they call four-poster beds.
Oh, yeah.
They got the big posts.
Right. Do you have little things like draping from side to side?
Well, you could do it.
Yeah, but no.
But we got the ceiling fan up there.
Uh-huh.
And some years ago, Georgianne reconfigured the bedroom.
Uh-huh.
And so the bed is now directly in the center of the room, which is great, as it should be, because the picture lines up real nice there over the bed. And then, but the problem, the ceiling fan's a little off-center. It's more on my side of the bed, which is fine.
Yeah,
I love the ceiling fans.
But, yeah.
You know, spinning around, you get the little background noise, which is nice. And then you get the cool breezes blowing, which is also nice.
Right.
So anyway, 1:30, 1:45, whatever it was, I do the flip. Go from my left
side
to my right side. And I guess there's a lot to flip there.
Yeah.
So, and I did the flip. Boom. And then, thump, thump, thump.
What happened?
The ceiling fan is hitting the bedpost. And Georgianne wakes up. She says, "What is?" And I said,
John,
"Oh boy,
John,
yeah."
There's somebody in the house. Thump,
thump, thump, thump. And I think, okay, I'm trying to figure out what the heck. And then it hits me. It's got to be the ceiling fan up there. When I did the flip, now we get the floomp.
Hey.
So I did the flip to the floomp. So I had to get out of bed.
Rectum. Pulled it.
Buddy, I pushed that. It was like a blocking sled on the football field. I pushed that bed a good 6-7 inches over.
Well, that's good.
And then she said, "Just turn the fan off." And I said, "No, I think I got to turn the fan off." So I turned off the fan, went back to sleep. And
good for you.
The rest is history, but I'm a little tired this
morning. See, I thought the story was going to go a different direction because when I flipped over around Halloween.
Your shoulder.
I hurt my shoulder.
Yeah, well.
I'm still dealing with it today.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking about going to a what do they call them, an acupuncturist to see if they can...
Oh, yeah, have them put some needles in there.
Yeah, see if they can get the inflammation or something. Yeah, have you hurting yourself flipping over, I mean, in bed?
Well, I didn't hurt myself.
No,
but
you
obviously, there was a lot of thrust going on. There's a lot of power. Like, you know, I pack a lot of power.
Yeah, there's no doubt about
this,
it. Well, you've always said to me that... Like just getting up, you're lifting some heavy weights.
I'm lifting plus 200 pounds every morning when I get out of bed. It's the most weightlifting I do.
The heart and soul of Cardinals baseball. KMOX.
And welcome back to KMOX. This is the Hancock and Kelly Show. We'll take you all the way till, 10 o'clock? Then we'll get joined by Amy and Chris, who will come in.
We actually will join them. It's their show.
Is it their show?
Yeah,
I thought they'll join
10.
Us.
No, we'll join them at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, but I know there's a lot of people who just stick around for that hour because it's you and I, and then, you know, because there are fans out there at the snooker hall. They come by and say, hey, look, we stick around till 11. No, but we'll be joining Chris and Amy for their show. Can't wait to hear about their opening day yesterday, John. We're going to talk about ours.
They were
at
down
9
at Kegs
o'clock.
And Eggs. We didn't make it over there.
Yeah, I didn't go to Kegs and Eggs this year.
Yeah, well, it was sold out.
Was it?
And I didn't have a ticket.
Yeah, I didn't have a ticket either.
You know, they don't.
You came to Pizza and Kelly's yesterday.
I did come to Pizza and Kelly's. It's quite good.
So this is our regular political subject, and I wanted to talk to you about what happened in Florida earlier this week.
Okay.
We had the ruling that came out that upheld the 6 week ban on abortion in Florida, meaning that after 6 weeks, no abortions could take place anymore in Florida. For many women, that's before they even know they're pregnant. At that same time, the Supreme Court in Florida also ruled clearing the way for this question to go to the ballot, which is no doubt going to be one of the driving issues of the upcoming election. John, I know you continue to tell me constantly, no, Kelly, it's the economy, it's Joe Biden's age, it's this, it's that. I keep trying to tell you it's Donald Trump, it's chaos, it's nonsense, it's MAGA extremism. But I don't know. The more I'm looking at these elections lining up around the country, abortion seems to me what's going to drive these elections, particularly in states that are going to matter with the Electoral College, Florida, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, the places that the fight's going to take place in. You still don't think that this is going to be the driving issue? I think this is a discriminator for my side.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be the driving issue. I think it's an issue, and it will be a voting issue for some. It will be a turnout driver for some. It will, the abortion issue will have an effect on the 2024 elections. I don't think it's the deciding factor that's going on. I mean, you look at the concern over border policy, which is not, it's no longer just a southern phenomenon. It's now all over the country. People see what's happening at the border, and increasingly they're feeling the effects of it in their own areas and states. And I think that's a huge issue for people. Now, there will be, depending on the abortion issue, is going to be on the ballot in a number of states in November, likely here in Missouri. And I think that what has been proposed in Missouri is probably too extreme in terms of access to abortion from where most public opinion is. I also think that the current state of the law in Missouri and other states is too restrictive for where a majority of the voters are. So you got this push and pull on the issue. There is a consensus area somewhere in the abortion debate where there's a point in the pregnancy where most people would concur that it's inappropriate to end the life of that unborn baby. And we have different opinions about what that point in time is, but I do believe there's a consensus out there in the country that, and it may be the first trimester, maybe 15, 16 weeks, somewhere in there. And I think that ultimately that's where most of the states are going to end up. Now you're going to have some states that are going to be more restrictive than that. You're going to have some states that are going to be less restrictive than that. But I think that's probably the sweet spot where public opinion really is on the issue.
So I live in the most restrictive state in the country for abortion.
Correct.
In my life of traveling around here in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, St. Charles, Jefferson County, every one of those places, I've been approached by passionate volunteers
mm-hmm.
who are wanting you to sign that. These are not, you know, as you would say, liberal college kids showing up or the accusation. I mean, these are grandmas, mothers who were collecting signatures. And I witnessed the same thing when I was in Florida, John. I think there is a building momentum around this issue, and because I think it puts a spotlight on how extreme the Republican Party has gotten. And when you look at a lot of the social issues, even in deep red Missouri, whether it be gambling or weed or so many other things, minimum wage, we see the voters are far left of where the politicians are. I think the abortion bans are going to drive these upcoming elections, and I think you're going to be shocked here in Missouri. You say it's too liberal of a bill. I meant liberal in the non-political sense.
Expansive. Too expansive to have access to it.
I think you're wrong. I think it's going to pass.
Well, it may pass, but it's the issue itself is I don't think the two sides talking about abortion right now, neither of them are talking about the issue in a way that is appealing to a majority of the electorate. But the pro-choice side has the benefit now of being on the outside of the policy. So for 50 years in this country, the pro-life side had the benefit, the political benefit, of being on the outside of the issue of where the policy was because of Roe v. Wade. And that gave impetus for pro-life rhetoric, pro-life policies, pro-life voting to take place. Now that shoe's been placed on the other foot, and the ones that are on the outside looking in at the policy are the pro-choice people, that provides them political momentum. And I think we'll see that. I don't think it'll be the defining issue of the campaign, but I think the abortion issue net-net politically, I'm pro-life, but politically, I think the abortion issue net-net is going to be a positive for Democrats. I don't think it'll be the deciding factor.
I do.
But here's another interesting thing, and it's not just on abortion. So politics and the contrast nature of politics, you got to say, you know, here's my opponent. I'm contrasting myself with my opponent. That's what you and I do for a living.
Right.
We take candidates, clients.
He bad, and I good.
Right. And when I started in this business 100 years ago, I would say 85 to 90% of my energy and activity and work was based on Republicans running against Democrats in competitive districts and states. Within the last decade, maybe 15 years, but recently, that whole dynamic has changed. And I'd say of the work that I do now in partisan politics, the vast majority of the work I'm doing is a Republican running against a Republican in a primary. That has changed.
Ditto. Yeah, ditto. The reason I know you is because you were the head of the Republican Party.
Right.
That we were fighting is, and to be honest with you, I bet less than, you know this better than anybody, less than 15, 20% of the races in the state of Missouri will take place between the Republican and the Democrat.
Everything else is decided in August.
Now, I'm actually getting to work on a couple of those because they're, they happen to be in the suburbs where most of these fights take place. So I'm working on some of them. But you're exactly right. I've spent the majority of my political life, the last 20 years, trying to outmaneuver other Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I think it's one of the things that's driving these policies far left.
Precisely.
And it's got to be what's driving this MAGA stuff to the right. I mean, we just witnessed this school board debacle out in St. Charles. I guess not a debacle, but a definite pushback at this conservative push, which is all being driven by this MAGA group. I mean, Joe Brazel is not a mainstream Republican.
So if you take an issue like like abortion, we're not really currently, in terms of the public policy aspect of it, we're not really having that debate anywhere near the middle because it's being conducted in Republican primaries and Democratic primaries. And so the prevailing sense politically is, I got to be the pro-life candidate. I need the pro-life endorsement. Therefore, I'm going to have zero restrictions on abortion on the left. I got to be the pro-life candidate. There should be no restrictions. This is a woman's right
to choose
what to do with her own body. And any kind of limitations we place on that is wrong. And it's an invasion of my privacy. And so those two extreme positions are being argued right now within the context of partisan primaries. We're not having a debate in this country around the middle where abortion policy ultimately needs to be set.
I guess that's right, John. But, I mean, how does this play out, though? Because here we are in Missouri. Like you said, we're going to have a very, expansive abortion ballot issue, which I'm going to be supportive of. Right. I think it will pass. You don't think it's going to pass. But here we are in Jefferson City with folks who don't want to have even exemptions for rape or incest.
Exactly.
I mean, is this a democracy derailed? I mean, is this how we're going to be doing democracy and legislatures? We're going to pass extreme stuff, and then we're going to go to a vote of the people?
I think it's going to be hard for elected officials who get their seat on the basis of having to win a primary election. I think it's going to be hard for those elected officials to find a sweet spot in policy on issues like abortion. But I think that if the Missouri law is too expansive in terms of access to abortion, it will become unpopular, and now the pro-life side will be on the outside looking in and have some momentum. And I think you'll see future ballot propositions begin to place some restrictions. Not abortion's not allowed in rape and incest.
Right.
The voters will never support that. But I think ultimately the policy through the voters, because I don't know that the elected officials will be capable of addressing it, through the voters, I think the policy will get to a place where there is majority support, and that's where the debate ends.
He is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. We're going to step aside here shortly. We've got the news for you at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and recap what was a spectacular St. Louis holiday yesterday, opening day. We're going to visit with Colonel McCausland about what's going on in Israel, the Biden administration laying down the law for Netanyahu over in Israel. And we'll tackle a bunch of other issues and even maybe talk with you good people.
Yeah, we're going to do all that and more when we come back after this very brief break on the Voice of St. Louis News Radio, 1120 KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
Welcome back to KMOX. Welcome back, John Hancock. I got to spend some time with you yesterday.
We did.
St. Louis's most incredible holiday of the year. And there it was. We started it off with a little Emo's Pizza.
We did.
I do believe we played a little on the table yesterday.
The pool table, yes.
In fact, I think I beat not one but two John Hancocks yesterday.
Yeah. It was,
Yeah, I don't like to talk myself, but it was kind of like the Cardinals. It was not only impressive, but overwhelming.
It wasn't overwhelming. It was 3-2.
Yeah, but I mean, when I potted that 8-ball and you had finally recognized that I was the champion.
Well, first of all, we were playing that stupid rule where you have to alternate every shot so you don't have a whole turn at the table.
Right.
So that kind of a structure obliterates my positional game because I make a ball, I get position, and now my partner,
who happens to be your offspring and your namesake,
number one son.
Yeah.
He then has to execute the next shot.
And so you would think he would probably listen to the tutelage of his father.
And then, he does. So he makes the ball sometimes. But then the position that he leaves me and then for the next shot is, shall we say, less than desirable in many instances, thereby rendering my natural gift of positional play moot.
Yeah.
It was moot. And when that happened, you and your partner, Barney, were able to eke out a 3-2 win in an 8-ball competition.
It was impressive.
There are reasons.
So we got there in time. Were you in your seat and seated for the world-famous Budweiser Clydesdale?
Yes, I was, and there they came. Yeah. And we were right down there, right on the—
Was that your favorite part yesterday?
Well, so I love the red jacket introductions. Mm-hmm. The Clydesdales are, nobody else has that, so that's big. But the red jacket introductions, and, it's just striking over the years. That last red jacket car for so many years was red, was Stan Musial. And then he passed, and then it was Red Shandienst, and then he passed. And then it was Bob Gibson and Lou Brock, and they both passed within a brief period of time between the two of them. So now bringing up that last car red jacket is Ozzie Smith, who now really is the dean of the red jacket members of Cardinal history. And we've seen the passing of that torch now over the past 6, 7, 10 years. But I love seeing Matt Holliday was there. Tony La Russa was back, looked good.
Yeah.
Whitey was up in the press box. Whitey's got to be at or near 90.
Exactly.
And he waved to the crowd, and that was great to see. So that's always stirring for me, and I'm a crier.
Yeah.
So I got, you know, the boo-hoos going on over there, and then they introduced the Cardinal coaching staff. Nice applause for the new bench coach, Daniel Descalzo.
Yeah, I heard that.
A very nice applause for the Marlins coach, Skip Schumacher.
Maybe one of the larger applauses of the
part of the
ceremony.
2006 World Championship Ball Club, and was the Cardinal bench coach just a few years ago, and he did a very good job with that Marlins team last year, got them to the playoffs. But they were 0-8 after their loss yesterday to the Cardinals, who looked, I think, very impressive. This is a gritty team, Michael. They're going to do better. I've been saying for weeks now, they're going to do better than a lot of the naysayers out there.
Well, I hope so. Hey, listen, I'm not a naysayer. I'm a season ticket holder. And mm-hmm. There's nothing more that I want than my season tickets to be more relevant.
Yes.
After the first month. Last year, you know.
April was tough last year.
Buddy, it was hard to get people to want to go to the game.
Could have been, and still maybe, but could have been very tough. Let me tell you, getting off the West Coast at 3-4, I know you're 3-4, but that's a win.
Yeah, well, and exactly. But, you know, that looked like a team yesterday that was grinding. I mean, look, we're grinding, just grinding out victories. They're not going to win them all, but they're trying. And there seems to be a different cohesiveness around this team. And by the way, to not having to listen to Ali Marmol make up excuses at press conferences, you know, at the beginning of the year so far, I think it was good. I felt like we started some momentum yesterday, and this team's trying. And our two best players, from my perspective, Goldschmidt and Arenado, I don't think these guys are where they expect themselves to be.
Oh, they're going to get there, both of them. Arenado, three hits yesterday. That was good to see. Goldie with another RBI. He's really been consistent and productive. Now the batting average has dipped a bit since his three-hit performance in the first game of the season. But, you know, this is a good-looking ball club. Ivan Herrera with his first career home run yesterday, and a good one, 414 feet that thing traveled over the bullpen. He's been a pleasant addition to this ball club. And I think the bullpen, man, people, you know, have been bellyaching about the starting rotation, and we'll see how that comes together. But this bullpen, if it's used properly and if it's not overused, that's why you've got to get length out of your starters, and we've not quite gotten there yet. But this bullpen is impressive, and it's not even complete at this point.
No. Downtown was all glitzed up yesterday. It was
hopping.
Cool to see people down there, the rallies that had that. There were tents all over both the north and south side of the stadium to see that many people back downtown.
Ballpark Village was hopping.
It was refreshing. Of course, Kegs and Eggs, you know, there's been years where we've had tickets up until the last day or so prior to Kegs and Eggs.
Yesterday.
They were sold out weeks in advance.
Right.
And so believe us when we tell you that stuff goes on sale in the future, because you're going to want to be a part of it. And Kegs and Eggs is a neat experience.
It's a great experience. You had a lot of former Cardinals that stopped by there and talked to Chris and Amy and Kevin and Dave and all of the team. So that was, and Tom, it was great.
Isn't it kind of cool to hear, you know, I don't believe it to be lip service either, but when you hear a Ricky Horton and when you hear Matt Holliday talk about the specialness of opening day in St. Louis, it's not just one of those, oh, everything's great always in St. Louis type. That was some genuine commentary yesterday about that I heard right here on these airways about how different and special opening day is in St. Louis.
Yeah, and I always think about it because there's always a number in those Mustangs that come pulling out of the wagon gate. There's always a number of players for whom this is their first Cardinal opening day. Some of them veterans. I think about a guy like Sonny Gray seeing this for the first time, participating in it. And Brandon Crawford, for that matter, a lifelong San Francisco Giant, getting to experience a St. Louis opening day. I think this was Mason Wynn's first St. Louis opening day as well. And that guy, he's hitting over 300. He, you know, you talk, he kind of gets lost in this conversation. There's so much focus on Victor Scott II, and rightfully so, but he's batting 100. Mason Wynn is off to a really good start, and he's really utilizing that speed. He hit a triple yesterday, and, you know, this kid and his defense is flawless. This kid is, I think, very special.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Speaking of special, there's just I do want to tell you, I had to go do some work yesterday morning. So I had to go to some meetings. Yeah. I ran into a bunch of friends of both of ours at some meetings. But there's something that happens around the Cardinals, either number one on opening day or number two when the Cardinals are winning, and that is nobody acts like a jerk. Mm. Like, everywhere I was at yesterday, everybody was polite and nice. See, nobody was trying to jump lines. Nobody was
not out there booing John Mosley. Oh, wait,
well, they may have done that. But nobody was elbowing you, trying to, you know. There's just something about the spirit and attitude that comes on opening day. And, by the way, when the Cardinals are in it, when we're fighting and playing well, there just seems to be a more jovial spirit about St. Louis. I loved it yesterday. I wish we could bottle it up and take us with us every day.
Well, let's hope it persists here for the next several months in St. Louis. These Cardinals off to a pretty interesting 4-4 start this year. The tough spot of this schedule is behind us now, at least in the first month of the season. And, you know, we'll see starting tomorrow if we continue to get some length and more length out of the starting pitcher, Steven Matz, going in the game tomorrow for the Cardinals against the Marlins, still looking for their first win of the year. And we shift now to thinking about American policy towards Israel. And as they fight in the Hamas war in Gaza, Benjamin Netanyahu increasingly becoming a controversial figure in this. Biden policy might be shifting. It's hard to read the tea leaves, but I'll tell you who's got a good tea leaf reader on him.
The Colonel.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst, retired colonel in the U.S. Army. Jeff McCausland, he joins us next right here on KMOX.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Messi fans, Lowe's Messi Halftime event hits July 19th. That's coming up fast, so now's a really good time to become a My Lowe's Rewards or a My Lowe's Pro Rewards member. Join for free and get access to exclusive Messi moments and epic surprises. Let's just say halftime's looking different this year. Make sure to follow Lowe's on TikTok and tune in to the Lowe's Messi Halftime event on July 19th. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Now, back to Hancock and Kelly. Sponsored by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. On News Radio 1120, KMOX.
You are listening to the Hancock and Kelly Show on KMOX. We go to the celebrity guest line right now. We're joined by Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, he's the CBS military analyst. Colonel, welcome back to KMOX after a big opening day win for our St. Louis Cardinals. I know you were thrilled to see that yesterday, sir.
No, I actually was. As you guys know, we've kidded around. I am a Cubs fan. The Cubs, by the way, are doing pretty well. I think they're ahead in the standings in the Cardinals right now, as a matter of fact. But I was excited about the Cardinals. You know, I went down to spring training and went down and watched the Cardinals. And they got this young guy, I think he's an outfielder, name is Scott.
Yes.
Who is unbelievable on the base path.
Electric.
And, of course, you got another rookie, I guess, last night who was filling in for Contreras, who I think was injured, who just had a big night as well. So some exciting young ball players, and that's always good to see for baseball.
Well, it's always nice when the Cub fans get to go down and see what real players look like. So happy to hear you got to spend some time in Jupiter there, Colonel. Hey, Colonel, in seriousness, Anthony Blinken with some really harsh comments yesterday. Apparently, President Biden visiting with Netanyahu also with some harsh comments. This is not a subtle change in foreign policy. They're really laying down some changes here, are they not, sir?
Clear on question, I think, indicating a dramatic change in American foreign policy with respect to Israel, which has been a longstanding ally of the United States from the very inception of Israel back in the late 1940s. And the United States has stood by Israel through a whole host of conflicts. But certainly this conflict in Gaza now has strained that relationship, and it was strained even further. You know, we really had three events in the last 36, 48 hours that have made things even more difficult. The most difficult, of course, was the strike on the World Central Kitchen Group, killing seven aid workers in an apparent major accident by the Israeli Defense Forces. But at the same time, we saw Israeli forces conducting, once again, military operations around the Al-Shifra Hospital in northern Gaza Strip. And in the course of doing that, that particular hospital, which was the largest medical facility in the Gaza Strip, is now completely destroyed. And some people estimate 1,500 people were killed or injured in the fighting around the Al-Shifa Hospital. And then last, but certainly not least, in something that might hearten further escalation, the Israelis conduct an airstrike in Damascus and strike a building associated with the Iranian embassy, killing an Iranian senior general officer in the Quds Force, causing major backlash, apparently, in Iran. And that portends difficult days ahead.
Yeah, it's really gotten dicey over there. And the U.S., working through Qatar, has been trying to negotiate some kind of a short-term ceasefire in exchange for the release of some of the hostages. That had been the position of the U.S. Have they shifted that policy? Are they now calling on a ceasefire first and then dealing with the hostage situation? Is that basically the shift we're seeing in U.S. policy?
That could well be, but the White House is pretty tight-lipped in what I've heard so far, and exactly what the president had to say in what was a rather brief phone call of only about 20 minutes yesterday with Netanyahu. But there seemed to be a strong inclination the president is pushing Netanyahu for a ceasefire, whether that's with a release of hostages or without, but moving towards a ceasefire very, very quickly. The attack against these aid workers that killed seven members of the World Central Kitchen has just resulted in a huge global outrage all around the world and leaving Israel even more and more isolated in the world community as this conflict has gone on. And, you know, here we are now in early April, the war having begun in October, but we're about 5-6 months into the conflict. And, of course, we've seen 32,000 Palestinians killed, 75,000 injured so far in this conflict. And the killing of these aid workers, not only is that horrific because they had deconflicted their efforts with the Israeli military, so they'd done everything they were supposed to do to be safe in their operations, but this also means the World Central Kitchen and, frankly, several other aid organizations have pulled out their support in the Gaza Strip, making a really cataclysmic situation for the people in the Gaza Strip before this, now even a little bit worse.
And then you've got the role of domestic politics here, both in Israel and the United States. So Bibi Netanyahu's not a very popular leader right now among the people in Israel. And I don't know how bad that situation has deteriorated. I suspect it's pretty bad. Meanwhile, you've got President Biden here, who's really been taking a lot of incoming from the left flank of his own electorate. And so there's an element of domestic politics at play in both of these actors.
No doubt about it. I mean, by the most recent poll I saw, which was even before this strike that killed the seven aid workers, about 55% of Americans disapprove of the way the Israelis have conducted this military operation. And, you know, next week, there's supposed to be a military aid bill finally reached the floor of the United States Congress, which is outlined, passed by the Senate, to provide $60 billion in military assistance to Ukraine. But it also includes provisions for $14 billion in military assistance to Israel. Now, it's been opposed by very conservative Republicans because of their opposition to aid to Ukraine. But in the aftermath of this tragedy, I think we're going to see next week is a large number of Democrats, progressive Democrats, opposing this bill, even though they support Ukraine, they'll now oppose the bill because of additional military aid going to Israel. And furthermore, of course, now we're in election year, and that's ramping up. Mr. Biden is looking very vulnerable in certain very, very key states around the country as more and more people are rising up and indignation to what's going on in the Gaza Strip. And then, but you're right as well. In Israel, of course, there are repeated calls by many Israelis for an election to oust Mr. Netanyahu and bring on someone else. We had Chuck Schumer, the leading Jewish politician in the United States, majority leader of the Senate, call for Netanyahu's departure. But he is still clinging to power, and we have to understand that he has to continue to assuage very right-wing members of the Knesset because their parties are what provide him a majority right now in the Knesset. So very difficult for him, I think, to make major concessions to the United States at this particular moment for fear of losing their support and his government toppling, while at the same time on the left, many people are calling in Israel for elections as well.
Yeah, it is a complicated geopolitical situation in which we all find ourselves, not just in Gaza, but also in Ukraine. And we so appreciate the expertise, the knowledge, and experience of Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland. Thanks so much for joining us here on KMOX. Jeff, we'll talk to you down the road.
Take care, guys.
All right. When we come back after the news, Michael, curious about, you know, the federal government says they're going to rebuild this bridge in Baltimore.
Right.
And our own Brad Young, our own legal analyst, Brad Young, is going to join us. Who owns these bridges? Is it the federal government's responsibility? How does all of that work? That's next on KMOX.
Dive into all things Cardinals on Cardinals Conversations, your go-to location for exclusive content from KMOX. Catch it on the Odyssey app or your favorite podcast platform. Stay connected with your team. Cardinals Conversations, where the Redbird talk never stops.
Welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. We are joined by our good friend, Mr. Brad Young. He is a lawyer at the law firm of Harris Dahl, Fisher & Young, and he's kind enough to join Hancock and Kelly here. Happy day after opening day, Mr. Young.
Oh, it was a great day yesterday.
Yeah, how you feeling about this team, buddy?
Time will tell.
Yeah.
Let's see when people come off the IL, and we'll see how we'll make a decision then.
So John and I wanted to have you on to talk about this horrible incident that's taken place.
Yes.
In Baltimore Harbor. We all witnessed it, the boat that knocked down the bridge, and here we sit. President Biden says that the federal government should pay for the bridge, and it opened up a bunch of questions that John and I were talking about. Number one, who owns the bridge? Is it owned by Maryland? Is it owned by the federal government? Who owns that bridge?
Well, typically, I don't know. You know, I didn't crawl underneath and look at the sticker underneath that says property of state of whatever.
That's the one. That's a tag you can't remove.
That tag you can't. And if you remove it, you know, listen, you get prosecuted by
right.
Letitia James.
Right.
But regardless, though, in this instance, I haven't looked at that specifically. Generally speaking, the bridges are owned by the states.
Okay.
And then the federal government pays for the maintenance when they cross navigable waters, when they cross state lines, when they're interstate highways, then they get federal funding. But typically the bridges are state owned. I don't know if that's the case here.
Yeah, and I would suspect that it's going to take a couple billion dollars probably to redo this bridge.
Oh, no question.
And the state of Maryland's not going to have that. They're planning for, you know, 20 years of construction. So it makes sense that the federal government would come in. The question is there's probably a lawsuit here potentially. Who gets to sue? Does the state of Maryland sue? Does the federal government sue? And if the federal government puts the money out and there is a ruling in favor of some type of reimbursement, does that money go back to the feds and you and I get to take that off our taxes? Or how's it work?
Well, it's going to take me a minute to describe this,
okay,
Michael, because I've actually been involved in bridge litigation. In 2015, there was a ship, a barge that broke off and hit the Eads Bridge downtown. And I was involved in that litigation. It took years and years and years to resolve. And so there is a unique law here. It was passed in 1851, and it's called the Shipping Limitation of Liability Act of 1851. It's unlike any other litigation you'll ever see. Here's the Reader's Digest version. Normally, in most lawsuits, plaintiffs file lawsuits against the defendants and seek to recover money, right?
Yeah.
But in this instance, it's the exact opposite. The defendant files the lawsuit under this 1851 law and then says to all the potential plaintiffs, come and get me. But I'm here in this particular jurisdiction and venue. And under this Limitation of Liability Act, if the ship owner can prove that they were not negligent in this instance, then the liability is capped at the value of the ship and the value of the cargo. So what does that mean in practical terms? It means that there are billions, billions of dollars of damages here, not just because of the bridge, but personal liability from those who were killed, right, those who were injured. You've got businesses, you've got who can't, who have now been impacted because the bridge is out. You've got shipping companies that can't ship their goods in and out. They all have damages. And so the damages are almost incalculable. But if they can, if the ship owner can use this 1851 law to limit their liability, all of that would be limited to just the value of the ship, the value of the cargo. And we call it the Titanic law, not because it, because 1851, long before the Titanic, but the White Star Line successfully used this law to limit their liability to $600,000 when the Titanic went down, even though they had almost incalculable damages. They used this exact same law. And so that's, I can promise you with 99.9% certainty that the owners of the ship will utilize this law. The question is, will they be able to utilize it successfully?
So that's really interesting. So the process here is that they will then go to court to get under this statute from 1851. Is that how you had to deal with the whole Eads Bridge case back in
yes,
the day?
Yes, that's exactly how we had to deal with that. And, but go ahead.
Why was that law in place in the first place in 1851?
Well, I could tell you very easily. You remember when the internet started, just right after Al Gore invented the internet?
Yeah, right.
Right, you remember that. So when that happened, the United States gave tax breaks to the internet to get this fledgling business off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in 1851 is the U.S. was getting hustled by other countries because of shipping the shipping business. And so in order to allow the shipping business to prosper and to grow and to catch hold in the United States, Congress passed this law in order to create an incentive for companies to expand their shipping business, because that would help the entire country economically. But now here's the key to this 1851 law, gentlemen. It's this. It's that the ship owner has to prove that they were not negligent, that they had no, and the fact the wording from the statute is privity or knowledge. They had no privity or knowledge. Now, privity isn't a word we use a lot these days, but basically what that says in modern language is they cannot be at fault, no negligence. If they can prove that, then they can take advantage of this law. However, you look at this, the ship lost power, so there could be negligence involving the maintenance of the fuel systems, the maintenance of the fuel that was used, the maintenance of the electrical lines within the vessel that transmitted electricity throughout the ship. We don't know. It has to be an investigation, but that's literally where this entire case will focus on.
Okay, and governments could be parties to those lawsuits and receive compensation?
Well, they could be, and here's why I say could be. Here's the rub when it comes to governments being involved in litigation, Michael. It's this. Even let's say for just a moment that this 1851 Liability Act does not apply, that it's proven that there was negligence, the ship owner had negligence, they don't get their liabilities limited. If that's the case, they have an insurance company here, but there are going to be limits on that insurance policy. And so if all of the damages from all of the other plaintiffs want to be compensated by the insurance, then the government's going to have to take it on the chin, because if the government comes in and says it's going to cost us $60 billion to rebuild this bridge, then none of the other plaintiffs would ever get any money. So the people who died, their families would get nothing. The businesses that suffered, they would get nothing, because the federal government's lien would be so enormous that it would take all of the insurance benefits and pay to the federal government. Probably what the feds are going to say is, we're not going to make a claim against the insurance, and so that the other damaged parties can then recover against the insurance policy.
Yeah, fascinating. Any idea? I have not heard. Are they speculating the length of time it's going to take to rebuild this thing?
Oh my goodness, years.
Years.
I mean, obviously, it's a years process. It's not anything that can be done quickly. What will be done quickly, though, is under this 1851 law, the ship owner has 30 days to determine and file a lawsuit. And so I promise you with every fiber of my being that the ship owner and the company that owns the ship, they're plotting with their legal team about filing this lawsuit. It's not guaranteed to be successful, mind you, but if they can utilize this law, they could limit their losses to the single digit or maybe double digit millions instead of billions.
Unbelievable. Wow. Good stuff, Brad Young. He's the KMOX legal analyst. He's a partner at Harris Dahl Fisher & Young, and he's been a guest on Hancock & Kelly. I don't know if your day can get much better than that, Brad.
I don't. You know, this is the highlight of my day, gentlemen. In fact, I'm just going to take off the rest of the day because this is the apex right here.
All right.
See you, buddy.
He's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. We're going to step aside. We've got one more segment before we're joined or have been barged in on by Amy and Chris right here on KMOX.
No fights, just insights. Talking politics with respect for all. This is KMOX.
Hey, that's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly.
Yeah.
And, buddy, I don't know about you, but there's no Cardinal baseball today.
That is correct.
No Blues game.
They have the day after opening day always off because
just in case it rains.
That's right. I never knew that's why they did that.
Well, really?
Yeah. I mean, wow. I found out a couple of years ago, but yeah. I'm saying all these years.
So you
always scratch my head about that.
So we got no Cardinal game.
It's the only Friday all season that there won't be Cardinal baseball.
No Blues game.
Well, the Blues are done.
Yeah. And no soccer game.
But boy, Saturday, you're going to have...
Yeah,
the Cardinals playing.
Right,
you got the city F whatever they call themselves playing soccer.
St. Louis City.
The Battle Hawks down at the Dome are going to be playing their home opener for the season, and then you got the Zach Brown Band also performing on Saturday night. It's going to be a madhouse down here.
Zach Brown.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
I'm a little bit chicken fried.
That's him. He's in town. Yeah. I would go see him.
I know it. Isn't that him, James O'Sullivan?
No, I don't know that you're right.
He's not chicken fried guy? No, I think he is.
Got chicken fried. Cold beer on
Adam
Friday
Wainwright's
night.
Walk-up song back Bear in the
jeans
day.
If it just, but tonight, right. You know what I'm going to do tonight?
What?
You're not going to believe it.
What?
I'm going to watch girls basketball.
Oh, yeah, we got Caitlin Collins out there.
Caitlin Clark, John. But, I mean, you've got the Final Four starts tonight.
Yeah.
You got North Carolina State versus South Carolina.
Yeah.
And you got
there's a whole lot of North Carolina State going on.
Well, there's a lot of Carolinas, period.
Because in the real basketball, North Carolina State's playing in that tournament too.
Yeah, and then you got UConn versus Iowa.
UConn is in the real tournament as well.
Yeah, and so you mean the men's tournament?
Yeah,
it's not the real tournament.
Well, you know,
both the men's and a women's tournament.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I just was helping you cover yourself there.
Yeah. No.
We don't need to get canceled over calling something real and not real.
Well, I'm just saying that the NCAA, you know.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Right. I think everybody completely.
But this Caitlin Collins is something else.
No,
she's
her name is. No. What? Now you're messing me up.
What?
What is it? It's Chris. Caitlin. No. What is her name? Caitlin Clark.
That's what I said.
Yeah, now you got me messed up.
Yeah, she's incredible. You know, she's the all-time leading scorer in the history of all.
Buddy, did you watch it?
Defeating
she's throwing
the
him up from like half court.
Of Pete Maravich. Pistol Pete, she broke his record.
Really?
Yes.
Don't know him. But he's the
Pete
one that,
Maravich?
Isn't he the one that the logo of the NBA is made after?
No, that's Jerry West.
Oh, that's Jerry West.
I think I'm right about that.
Well, you may be right.
Because I've been wrong about so much this segment, but I think Jerry West is the model for the NBA logo.
Yeah.
The L.A. Laker guard back in the day.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I'm going to be watching girls basketball
tonight.
Well,
she is amazing. I saw a bit of the game the other night.
She's throwing it up
from half court. Playing against, other team.
That one, yeah.
And she...
LSU.
She's get that. She gets that ball out there. And, you know, the three-point line is, you know, it's back there.
Yeah.
But no, she goes... like almost a half court, and
yeah.
She's launching these missiles.
And she just throws it up.
It's unbelievable. And
she reminds me of the guy out in San Francisco.
George Gervin.
Curry. Stephen Curry.
Yeah?
Yeah, he throws it up from half court, too.
Is that
they're,
right?
They're similar.
But this gal, I mean, she's something, and she's going to the WNBA after this year. Is that
you
going
to watch a game tonight?
I may have to tune
in. I think
in.
You're going to have to throw it on.
Because this is a tough game, of course, up again. Who are they playing again?
The UConn. UConn's one of the best teams ever.
They got that one girl.
Yeah, the tall one.
Yeah. And but Caitlin Collins, man, she brings her game. She'll bring the A game.
I don't think we're ever going to get invited to do Sports Open Line.
To the thing. I mean, no, she's a...
You've butchered the name.
And she's advertising for state funding. You know, you got this
called
now.
One sport real and the other one not.
NIL stuff now, where you got your name and your image and your likeness that you're able to make money off of out there when you're in the college game. And she's on... You know, with Patrick Mahomes or whatever on doing the State Farm commercials.
I did see her on there.
Now, that's what I'm telling you.
There are two or three of these celebrities that are shameless when it comes to commercials. One of them is Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that guy, he's advertising everything everywhere the time.
He's a big deal.
Peyton Manning's the other one.
He's also a big deal.
Yeah, he advertises.
Now you got his little brother on there.
Yeah, Eli.
Whatever.
But the one who takes the cake for me,
twice in the Super Bowl. Yes.
And by the way, I'm for it for this guy.
Okay.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Shaq.
Shaq sponsors so many doggone things, he doesn't even know what he sponsors. Like the other day, I saw him advertising for Carnival Cruise Lines.
Oh, well.
Now, it says, just like I always say, if you're going to go on a cruise, go on a Carnival. And I'm like, I've never heard Shaq say anything about cruise lines before in my life. But like he always says...
He would be a fascinating companion at the dinner table there on the cruise.
Well,
I would bet he takes up a pretty good...
Well, but I mean, just sitting at a normal table for someone the size of Shaq, their kneecaps are, you know, table high.
Are those buffets usually on the cruise? Or
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So maybe they're trying to say they got Shaq-sized room on these cruises.
Imagine the amount of food that man must consume.
Yeah.
They're on a cruise.
Yeah, he's a big dude, man.
He would take, you know, Johnny and I went out to dinner after the game last night.
Yeah.
You know, I eat quite a bit myself.
Yeah, where'd you go?
We went to Brio.
How was it?
It was lovely. And, but, you know, I could spread some plates. I can, you know, and tonight at the birthday dinner for Junior.
Junior's birthday
dinner. I'm going to have some plates going on.
Yeah.
You know, and
did you sit at the bar or did you get a table?
We
at
got
the
a
restaurant?
Table.
At Why'd
the
you
restaurant?
Do that?
Well, because.
That's what you do?
Yeah, when we were having a wonderful father-son
And this
moment.
Was your birthday present yesterday that you were executing.
This was my birthday present from John. He bought the opening
cool
day tickets.
That?
It was perfect.
Hey, he's Although John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. Don't forget, Sunday morning, 8:30, Fox 2. You can see Hancock and Kelly, the television show. If you don't want to watch us on TV, tune in at 7:15 Sunday morning right here on KMOX. And we join Scott... With the Sunday morning show.
Get these last names right,
yeah,
Kelly.
Right.
Chris and Amy next on KOX.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Messi fans, Lowe's Messi Halftime event hits July 19th. That's coming up fast, so now's a really good time to become a Milo's Rewards or a Milo's Pro Rewards member. Join for free and get access to exclusive Messi moments and epic surprises. Let's just say halftime's looking different this year. Make sure to follow Lowe's on TikTok and tune in to the Lowe's Messi Halftime event on July 19th. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
It experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.